All right, everybody, welcome to Lecture 5, which is our more tutorial-based delivery of exploration, where it will be on an as-needs basis as to what students want explained and what students need as to what is actually going to be delivered in the lectures. It is therefore assumed that all students will be making use of the curriculum notes up on www.qcat.org and will have theoretically read the chapters that we are going to cover, which will stop us having the problem with students not actually reading up to the point where I'm actually lecturing and then sort of trying to catch up with the lectures. Now, last week was an exception because I actually went into chapters that people hadn't read, so I'm not having a shot at anybody at this particular instance. I'm purely saying that there are some students who will try to obtain all of their information from the lectures and not actually read the course notes, and from this point on that is highly discouraged because it won't be very successful. Okay, Mike, you have a question relating to DNS that you wanted to ask.
Yeah, I understand that when the client requests from the domain name server a translation for a domain name, that the domain name server first becomes authoritative for the top level domain, and then it I don't know whether does it pass it to another domain name server to do an authorization on the next lower level, the secondary level, or does it perform that and become authoritative on other parts of the domain name itself?
That depends. Okay, so I think what we might do is we'll have a quick talk about how DNS actually primes itself and how it gets knowing, how it knows things. So basically what happens is, let's assume that you have what we call a recursive name server. Now, a recursive name server, or a name server that accepts recursive queries, is an instance of some name resolving software. Most often Bind, although there are other options, and Sabahattin's tried most of them and is still bouncing around looking for all different ones. But if you happen to be like most of the internet community and you are still running Bind, you generally have a copy of Bind somewhere, whether it's you, whether it's your ISP, whether it's OpenDNS. As I said, there are other options, DJB, DNS, PowerDNS, etc. Now, what you basically do is the root of the domain hierarchy is known as dot. So if you look at the address www.google.com, the actual correct way of writing that address, if you're going to write it fully canonically, is www.google.com dot. Now, the dot's important because when you load the name server up, you actually get what's called a hints zone. And the hints zone tells you what the names and IP addresses of the root name servers are. And the root name servers are the ones that are authoritative for the top level of the domain hierarchy. So they hold information about .com, .net, .org, .au, .nz, in fact any of the top level domains, .quadxx, in fact. And I think if we could get an exact number at some point, but I think there might be 26 root name servers, and I saw a statistic at some point that said that they were doing, oh, well, the number I saw was 200,000 queries a second. Does that sound right, I wonder?
I think I is any casted, so there's probably even more.
Sorry, go ahead, Mike.
I said it sounds on the low side to me, given all the users of the internet who are possibly querying a particular domain name at any one time. I would have thought it'd be a little higher than that.
Ah, no, but see, this is where the sneaky stuff comes up. Okay, so say, for example, you're looking at your workstation, which is probably the primary way that people are going to look at this initially. You have a resolver that's built into Windows or OS X or whatever you're doing. And that resolver is generally told it has what we call forwarding name servers. And the forwarding name servers are usually at your ISP or OpenDNS or your company name servers or the ones that you've been told to put in there. So when you look up www.google.com, let's assume that you're the first person to do that, which would be pretty amazing. But let's just say the name server just got rebooted. So it's going to ask your name server that your resolver is going to ask the root name servers what are the authoritative name servers for the .com domain. And the name server is going to tell you, and you are going to cache that information. And the period of time that you cache that information is controlled by what we call the TTL, or the time to live. And it tells you how long you can hold records in your cache before they need to be forcibly expired. Now, so it asks who the .com name servers are. It gets back a series of answers. It caches that information. It then asks who is authoritative for Google.com. It then gets a series of requests back that tell it who is authority for Google.com. It then caches that. It then asks who is www.google.com. Well, more specifically, your resolver asks your forwarding name server who is www.google.com. Your forwarding name server then walks its way up from the root of the domain tree to the .com same servers, the .google.com name servers, and then it looks up www.google.com, which turns out to be a CNAME for something on Akamai.net. So it then runs out and looks up the stuff on Akamai.net, and then it I think it's Akamai.net, let me have a look. And then it returns that information, and those information is handed back to your it's handed back to your computer. So let's get a command prompt here. Ping www.google.com. Oh no, it's www.l.google.com is the one I got that time. I wonder if I get the same again. Yes, I get the same again because that's cached. So the reason that the caching is important is because it reduces the load on the root name servers. Because if you think about it, every time you visit the URL of www.facebook.com, it'd be silly for you to look up that name every time if you only just looked it up and it just probably hasn't changed. So basically what happens is that those records are cached, and you thereby get to hang on to that information and reuse that from your cache.
All right, I see. So every time you go to Google, you don't have to call upon the root name server to start the process cascading down, because you have that all in cache, and you would only need to do that again once the lifetime of the information in the cache exceeds the time to live, TTL. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. Once the records age beyond the TTL, you then have to re-ask the questions that you previously asked. Now, what generally happens on home connections is you are sent to a forwarding name server, say your local ISP's name server or OpenDNS. Has anyone had a look at www.opendns.com?
Yeah.
Okay. Has anybody played with the more advanced features, like, for example, the filtering and blocking?
Yeah,
sorry, you're after something?
OpenDNS. I'm using OpenDNS, but I don't. I've looked at those features, but I don't actually use them currently.
Yeah, there are some defaults, but only if you sign in. Like, if you sign up for the free account and you sign into OpenDNS, that's when you see the defaults.
I think there's some NX redirection that still happens That's how they make their money, isn't it?
Okay, there's some... Yeah, if you go to something that doesn't exist, it will tend to redirect you to a Google search page that says OpenDNS, we could not load, yada, 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 yada. Try these Google search results. And I think that's probably the redirection that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think that's it. And they don't do any filtering unless you sign in and then they remember the IP that you're making your queries from and it all goes from there.
Well, you actually add the IP in yourself. If you actually add the networks in yourself and actually put in the IP and stuff, if you're on dynamic, they'll tend to remember it. But if you actually hard code in IPs and stuff, I have one of their paid plans just because it gives me nifty statistics and stuff. And I then have the ability to set various filter categories and whatever else. So if I go in and click the button that says no time wasters, nobody from my house can go to YouTube or any other time-wasting sites. Now, I don't do that, but that is certainly something I could do. I would also have to put in rules to my firewall to stop them from changing their DNS servers to anything else, and then I would be able to prevent them from bypassing that protection that OpenDNS provides. It's useful if you have children. There are lots of sites that you don't want your children accidentally stumbling across. And sometimes you can use OpenDNS to turn on that sort of filtering so that your children can surf things like YouTube in safety.
Google DNS doesn't do any of that. They don't offer anything like that. It's just a resolver.
Yeah, but you've got to ask how much information do they track about you and where you went and what you looked up. That's been a lot of people's concern with a lot of these big companies of late.
I run my own, of course, yeah.
Ah, but does yours inefficiently query the root name service, or are you talking to a nearby forwarder?
No, I go to the root. My ISP's DNS servers aren't reliable. I think that's how it started.
Ah, well, let's not go surf the web at Sabahattin's place, because it's going to take you about a second and a half for the first resolution of Facebook.com, unless he's already been there.
Nope, it knows me.
Of course, if we go to, say, you know, Playboy.com or something, and we get a very fast response, we can, you know, make some inferences there, couldn't we?
Yes, we could.
Yeah, and in fact, if you did a DNS query and it said non-authoritative answer www.playboy.com from whatever it was that he was going to, you would certainly find that you would be asking yourself, now, why is that in the cache? There are other reasons for a non-authoritative answer, but it seems like a good enough reason to at least stir him up a bit and give him a hard time.
I think there's actually a feature in the software to prevent snoopers. You can, if you ask a question that doesn't request recursion, it'll just drop the query. But yeah, you can get around that by just measuring the TTL against the real name server. So yeah, you could probably find out one way or the other.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, we're just talking about it as an intellectual exercise. We personally don't care whether you've been to said website. It's just a technical point of interest that you could tell whether you possibly have, based on the TTLs and the time returned, as to whether somebody has recently been to that site and executed that query. Now, it could also be some malware that may have made its way onto Sabahattin's Mac that has decided to go and look all these things up on his behalf. So it might not actually be that he's been there. It may have been that some other software has been there for him, just as an example. Now, it's harder to get malware onto a Mac, but it certainly can be done. And that is certainly a real risk for a lot of people. There are cases where people have had their connections hijacked, their things stolen, and they, for example, there has been records of their computers visiting child pornography sites, And it certainly wasn't those people that went there, but it was people that had hijacked their connection and used their resources. Which is just another reason why we have security on our wireless network, boys and girls. Isn't that right? Yes, malware can change DNS settings and redirect you off to a different set of DNS servers, which is known as DNS poisoning, so that when Charlene goes to www.google.com, a picture of human wildlife may appear on her screen because her DNS query was redirected by the malware and has taken her somewhere unintended. That is certainly an attack vector that malware authors use. Okie dokie. So does that theoretically answer your question about DNS?
Yeah, it does, and it also raises a number of other questions, but there's something to think and research myself, I think, before I need to bring them back. But clearly my original question was couched in a simplistic understanding. I now have a much clearer understanding of the interaction between the client, the domain name server, and the forwarding domain name server and the root server, and how that recurses down the tree to return the address.
Well, one of the other things you can do is if you fire up T-Shark and tell it to listen on port 53 and do some DNS queries, it can be quite instructional. Now, you may have better things to do, but if you don't, that can be a good way to see what queries are actually being sent out and what things are actually being returned.
Oh yeah, that'll be a fun thing. I'll probably do that tomorrow morning, just to see what happens when I send out a DNS query.
Well, you'll find that your computer actually sends out DNS queries whether you are or not. Things like Windows Update, things like Dropbox if you have it, things like Skype if it's open, things like any messengers if they're open. In fact, even the networking stacks in Microsoft will tend to throw out things here and there. So you may be quite surprised to see that queries are going out when you haven't, in fact, necessarily initiated them. Obviously, opening a browser will initiate those queries, and you'll certainly see the ones from the browser. But there's actually a reasonable amount of background noise going on that you're not actually directly responsible for. Yeah, it does. If you're running iTunes and you're running Bonjour... Oh, hang on. Somebody wants me. Give me a sec, guys.
I said, this week...
Sorry, guys, have I missed anything? I just got a call from somebody who's supposed to be helping me with something that I don't know about, and they'll be coming to see me next week, so that should be awesome. Alright, sorry about that, guys. Did anybody ask any questions, or did anybody say anything?
We all sat in silence, awaiting your return, Kerry.
Oh, how depressing. Alright. So, that's DNS. Does anybody have any other questions before I start talking about the remote bundle? Actually, random question. Anybody apart from Charlene, who was busy editing it yesterday, has anybody seen our general wiki on wiki.qcat.org, which doesn't have lots of stuff in it yet? Ah, yes, well, I should have you know that... Actually, did I link to the... Oh, yes, I did link to the wiki in the student resources document. Ah, yes. Good. I remember doing something like that. It's worth a look. There's stuff that's starting to be added in. And, okay, I'm going to do my best to write some documentation up for the remote bundle, but if you guys think that the documentation is inadequate and you don't like it, the wiki is your recourse. I mean, you can give me a hard time as well, but actually getting into the wiki and actually adding things will actually make it happen, as Charlene's certainly found out. Yeah, it is really, really easy. It's like exclamation mark for headings and star for bullets and some other thing for like lists, and it's really, really easy. equals, I think, and then a space on the beginning of a line makes pre-formatted text. So it's basically just Notepad with funky bits on it. And that means if you guys want to write things up, it's PMWiki. PMWiki.org. It's written in PHP, and yes, it runs on the Mac. Actually, out of morbid curiosity, Steve, did you set yours up on the Mac? Because you have one, don't you?
Did I set what up, sorry? No, I downloaded
it, but I didn't actually do much with it. What did I do with it? No, I ran it off a USB drive on Windows, I think, or something like that.
Okay, and I was asking Steve whether he'd set up PMWiki on his Mac, and he hadn't. But it can be done. If you've got some sort of PHP and you've got some sort of web server installed, and Mac usually comes with some horrific version of Apache by default, it should do it. And I think there are various hacks and things to enable the client operating system to do bigger things with PHP. There's a stupid question. Does anybody know what PHP stands for? Yeah. Oh, okay, it might be. Come on, it's a Merc script for the web. It's not that hard. Some people struggle with PHP. Hey, some people struggle with Perl. I'll put my hand up. I struggle with Perl. That thing is evil. That thing is pure evil that systems administrators should never be using, and they should be getting real work done and writing in C because it's eventually going to bog down. But yeah, there's Perl. I don't enjoy that either. But there is PHP, and there are other languages, and we all have fun. Oh, there is JavaScript. That's worse. Okie dokie. So that's DNS dealt with. And there is a wiki, and you can edit it. And if you want the edit password, you go into the search box. Hey, fancy this, guys. You go into the search box, and you type in edit password. And a page comes up with the edit password on it. Isn't that awesome? Yeah, I thought it was. And you can actually look up stuff, and then you can go in and edit things. I will talk to you later, Charlene, about what you found out about the permission problems and stuff, and whether it was only the root pages that you could get access, or whether you could get access to the lower levels, because that's not relevant to what we're doing now. But yeah, all good. Now, shall we demonstrate the remote bundle? I can talk about it, but I'm thinking that an ounce of demonstration is going to do a pound of talking about. So it just depends on how we want to do this. You do actually. You do have an official say. In fact, Debbie can even say what she wants to do if she wants to. I mean, I'll listen to you. Whether I take any notice, of course, you still get an official say. Isn't that awesome?
Yes, yes, do the remote bundle. I've read the documentation.
Yes, and it's horrific, but let's do the remote bundle. Okay, I've been meaning to rewrite it for about 4 years now. Alrighty, let's see if I can break virtual audio cable. Now, if you don't already have TerraTerm installed, you need to install and configure TerraTerm, if you're running Windows. If you're running the Mac, well, that's your own fault, and you can do whatever you want. The terminal will do a lot of it. It won't be very good for the full screen stuff, but Cisco stuff is primarily line-based, so you might just get away with using the stuff under the Mac terminal. But if it breaks, you keep both pieces. It should be all right. So basically, the long and short of it is you install TerraTerm and you edit the termnotes.txt. You actually read that. Actually, I've got to edit the termnotes.txt and add the paragraphs that Debbie put in ages and ages ago, which I forgot about. And then you set up your JAWS / NVDA / whatever so that your TerraTerm works. A lot of the people here have been in the Linux class and they're already set up to go. But all the stuff is up under general instructions, under the networking subfolder, and you follow the bouncing ball and you get TerraTerm going, which is in the extras folder. You will need TerraTerm to go before you... Well, you can use Telnet. Be warned, however, that Telnet is not installed in Windows 7 by default. You actually have to go into Program and Features and add it in. Now, I can't remember the command I saw the other day, but there is actually a thing under Windows 7 called pkginst or pkgtool or something. You can actually install bits of Windows from the command line without actually going into the Programs and Features tab. I did not know that. Alrighty, let's get some vac magic going here. And let us show you the remote bundle. Now, the remote bundle, I'll basically just do a quick overview. It is a serial switch with 16 ports on it. Not all of the 16 ports are available to you. Only 12 or 13 of them are. The bundle consists of three pods. Each pod consists of a router, a switch, and two virtual workstations. The routers are a Cisco 2900 series, the switch, or no, the 2821s, and the switch is a 2900 series switch, and the virtual machines are Ubuntu 9.10 running on a couple of noisy boxes in the storeroom. And you have three pods to talk to. The routers are connected to the switches via Ethernet. And you also get access to the console ports of the routers and the console ports of the remote workstations. And all of the routers are linked to each other with serial cables, V.35 serial, so that you can configure up topologies and bounce packets around the topology. Note 1, there is no internet connectivity to the remote bundle. This is to stop you from doing nasty things, launching attacks from our remote bundle, and being generally unhelpful. So you cannot get internet access from the remote bundle. The only way into the remote bundle is to come in via the serial switch and communicate inside the sealed topology. Alright, let's launch some vac magic. And let's see if we can't break things. Vec stuff. I even went to the bother of fixing all this up last week so that it would work. So here's where it becomes useful. Work.au3. 1, 2, 3. Okay, we have three repeaters and... three cables. Let's see where I'm injecting things. Okay, line 3 to 2. Line... what? Okay, line 3 to the speakers. Okay, so I'm doing this. Let me see. Okay, can you guys still hear me? 1, 2, 7, 5, 6.
Yep.
Alrighty, here comes JAWS. Okay. I'll slow that down a bit. Okay. How's that? 40%?
Wonderful.
Voice adjustment.
Okay.
Jamie Principato has just signed into Facebook chat.
I mean, I could be really slack and go into eSpeak, but I figure you guys will be happy with Eloquence. I actually prefer eSpeak for this work, but we'll use Eloquence for now.
Windows M, desktop folder.
Just let me... oh.
Desktop.
Oh. Tab,
voice
adjustment. That
voice
failed.
Tab, voice Windows M, desktop, folder default M, record slash data sidebar.
Hey, that failed. If you go into the voice adjustment and then you minimize out of it, the adjustments don't take effect. So let's do that again.
Dot option submenu O. O, basic dot dot. Voice submenu V. Real dot dot F, voice submenu, voice adjustment dot dot V. Enter, new menus, voice adjustment dialog, profile, profile name, code, combo box, element, slower, 5-5, tab, profile, default, tab, synthesizer, tab, synthesizer, language, code, combo, tab, synthesizer, detect, voice, synthesizer, tab, voice, code, combo box, all context, tab, voice, recall, 118, left, right, slider, 70%, 60%. 40%, tab, voice plug, tab, voice spell, tab, voice upper, tab, say all, tab, okay, but tab, save as, shift, tab, okay, Windows M, desktop.
Hey, that got it. Okay. Now we are at sensible talkie speed. All right. So, the first thing we need to do, and this is like one of those cooking shows where I say things like, so, we set up TerraTerm by installing the JAWS script, setting the cursor settings, setting the window size, going through and configuring all of the other options in TerraTerm, and here's one I prepared earlier. So here is my TerraTerm that I prepared earlier, and I am going to open up TerraTerm. Now, step one on the remote bundle, you must telnet to the remote bundle, you must telnet to the remote bundle, you must telnet to the remote bundle, telnet, 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 telnet. If you SSH, it's not going to work. You've got to telnet, you've got to telnet, you've got to telnet, all right? That doesn't stop you all from at least trying to SSH in once, and you're not going to get the remote bundle if you SSH. You have to telnet. Okay? I think I've really made that point very clear. I am actually going to connect to a different address, but you guys are telnetting when you're telnetting in, and you're not doing it now. You are telnetting... Well, you can if you like, actually. We get four concurrent connections. You are telnetting to www.qcat.org. How hard can it be? Guess what, everybody? All the addresses are on the same thing, so you don't even have to know another address. That's what we call ease of use in Kavi. But I am going to telnet to the internal address of the bundle, which is one that you guys will never use because it's a 192 address.
TrueCrypt, TTerraTerm, TTeamTalk, TrueCrypt, TTerraTerm, enter. TerraTerm dash left bracket disconnected right bracket VT, TerraTerm colon new connection dialog, host colon edit combo, WW.
I should go around a few more times and see if I can get anybody's blood pressure to go up, because that really annoys me when people like tab pass things six times on a podcast or something.
144, tab, history checkbox checked, alt plus tab, SSH radio button checked, 2 of 3, telnet radio button checked, 1 of 3, alt plus L.
Alright.
Enter, TerraTerm dash left bracket disconnected right bracket VT, file edit setup control window help. Jaw, scroll up symbol, enter password, colon, PC.
Okay, now that doesn't tend to talk, so...
Both characters are none.
That's all good, so I log in.
Star.
Now, the thing that's going to happen is it's going to give me a screen full of ports when I hit enter here, and here it comes.
Port status, colon, version 3.0, site ID, colon, copy bundle, port, vertical bar, name, vertical bar, password, vertical bar, status, vertical bar, mode, vertical bar, buffer count, --++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++//////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////// 0, 2, vertical bar left paren undefined right paren vertical bar left paren undefined right paren vertical bar free vertical bar any vertical bar 0, 0, 3 vertical bar router 1 vertical bar left paren defined right paren vertical bar free vertical bar any vertical bar 0, 0, 4 vertical bar.
Okay, we all get the idea. There is a list of 16 ports there. So to look at the list of 16 ports, JAWS cursor, route JAWS to PC.
JAWS to PC.
Up.
And Lexit 14, 12, 11, 10, 0, vertical, 0, 8, 0, 7, 0, 6, 0, 5, 0, 4, 0, 3, vertical bar, router 1, vertical bar, left.
See, we've got 0, 3 for router 1.
0, 4, vertical bar, switch 1, vertical.
0, 4 for switch 1.
0, 5, vertical bar, WKS 1, vertical. 0, 6, vertical bar, WKS 2, vertical bar.
See how that makes up a pod? You've got router 1, switch 1, WKS 1, WKS 2. Now, if we keep going down,
07 vertical bar router 2 vertical bar left paren defined right paren 08 vertical bar switch 2 vertical bar left paren defined right paren vertical bar 3 vertical bar any vertical bar 09 vertical bar WKS 3 vertical bar left paren defined right paren vertical bar 3 vertical bar any vertical bar 0 10 vertical bar WKS 4 vertical bar left paren defined right paren vertical bar 3 vertical bar any vertical bar 0.
And there are other things on here.
15, 16 vertical bar left paren undefined right paren flip 4 third left hand 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0,
but we'll come to that later.
CMS grader.
And I'm now sitting at the CMS grader prompt. I can't remember what CMS stands for. I did know once. Something switch. Some console management switch. Yes, that's what it stands for. So I can connect to any of these devices and do things with them. Before I continue, does anybody have any questions, queries, concerns?
Do we need a password and port number to log in, or just the qcat.org?
Okay. www.qcat.org and your telnetting, so that will default to port 23, which is your default port for telnet. The passwords are pod1, pod2, and pod3. That will give you access to all of the pods. I don't quite trust you all enough to give you the administrator password quite yet. So it's pod1, pod2, and pod3 for the three individual pods. Any other questions? Okay. So, say
that
for example you
work.
Want... No, it didn't. So, whatever. Say... What was it, a question or a password, or what was the problem?
The password that you just gave, but pod and then a number. I just tried it and it didn't work for some reason.
Pod. Papa Oscar Delta.
Yep.
Alright, let me test that in a minute. I will have to check that.
190.
Because that should work.
CMS greater.
Alright, well let's...
Disconnected.
We can do that now.
No Windows active. Windows M, desktop, folder view, list view, Theraterm, enter.
Two is working.
Theraterm, dash, left bracket, disconnected, right bracket, VT, Theraterm, colon, new connection, dialog, host, colon, edit, combo, 192.168. Tab, history, checkbox, tab, SSH radio, button, telnet radio, button, enter, Theraterm, dash, left, D, enter, port status, colon, version 3.
Hey, pod 1 just worked for me. I don't know what you're on, Sabahattin, can we have some?
Yes, okay, I just tried again and it worked for some reason. Not sure, maybe I let a character slip in or something, but it works now. Huh.
Yeah. We try and test this stuff before the lecture so I don't look like a complete blithering idiot. It doesn't always work, but it's one of those things we do try. Now, what you'll notice here is that you don't actually see as many ports when you connect to a particular pod, so... You got all these blank lines
here.
See how you only see router 1, switch 1, WKS 1, and WKS 2? When you are connected to pod 1.
PC. Enter. CMS greater.
Now, you can actually go /h to get help for things, but this thing is pretty easy to drive. So, for example, what you do is if you want to connect to... Now, don't do it because I'm about to and I'd like to. Is if I want to connect to router 1, I go /c3.
/c3. Enter. Connected 03 colon router 1. To disconnect, enter colon caret B.
To disconnect, enter caret B. To disconnect, enter caret B. Pay attention, people, or you won't know what the breakback character is. And then you'll have to, like, bail out of the Cisco switch, and then when you come back in, it'll be still connected, and it'll be really frustrating, so don't do it, right? The breakout character is control B.
Enter Perth Greater.
Okay, I'm currently at Perth Greater then, so I'm going to enable.
Enable, enter Perth number.
And I'm going to do a reload.
Reload, enter, proceed with reload, left bracket, confirm, right bracket. Y, enter. Starbar 8226 colon percent size dash 5 dash reload colon reload requested by console reload reason colon reload command. System bootstrap version 12.4 left parent 13R right parent E release software left parent FC1 right parent technical support colon http colon /// www.cisco.com/tech support copyright left parent C right.
Isn't that kind of awesome? Here it comes. The router is booting up. You guys get complete access to all of the bits and pieces of the router, apart from actually cabling it up. So you have just as much access as a sighted person would have.
JAWS, LAN. Program load complete, entry point colon 0x8000F000, size colon 0xCB80. Program load complete, entry point colon 0x8000F0ZPC. Number.
That is the iOS image decompressing. And if you are actually using a braille display, it can be fun to watch the number wander across the braille display. It contains cryptographic features. Good for it. Okay, press return to get started.
Enter. *A22811.439%, VPN underline HW-6-info_lock:crypt-engine:onboard 0 state change to init idealized *A22811.447%, VPN underline HW-6-info_lock:crypto-engine:onboard 0 state change to app led *A22811.383% link-3-up-down:int interface fast ethernet 0/0 change state to up *A22811.383% link-3-up-down:int interface fast ethernet 0/1 cha jet state to up *A22811.383% link-3-up-down:int interface E0 0/0/0 change state to up
Okay, so we don't need all of that.
*A22816.071%, link-5-change:int interface serial 0/0/1 change state to administered. Idly down scroll down symbol. PC. Enter. Earth greater.
And we are now sitting at a router prompt. Now, remember what I said about the breakback character being Control B. If I press Control B.
Control B disconnected. G port status colon version 3.0. Site ID colon copy bundle. Port vertical bar name vertical.
I'm now connected back to the serial switch. If I want to connect to something else, for example the switch, /C4.
/C4, enter, connected 04:switch1. To disconnect, enter :B. Enter, switch1 greater.
And there we go. We are connected to the switch. Control B to break back.
Control B disconnected. G port status colon.
If I want to connect to one of the workstations, C5.
C5, enter, connected 05:WKS1. To disconnect, enter :B. Enter, copy at WKS1:$. Control D, logout. Ubuntu 9.10 WKS1-0, WKS1 login colon.
Okay, guys, the username for these workstations is Cavi, C-A-V-I.
Cavi, enter, password colon.
And the password is Cavi.
Cavi, enter, last login colon, WebFeb 2214-2131 WST2012-IS0, Linux WKS1 2.6.31-9-generic-pay-number-56-Ubuntu-SMP2-JAN-28229-5.
Now, the fact is I was going to rejig this entire remote bundle and actually set it up so that you could, I had newer stuff on it and better virtualization and stuff, but unfortunately I've got a class running semester and I don't think too many of you, you are going to be happy if I pull the remote bundle down for a week while I work on it, although I can pull bits of it down. So we'll see what happens. So we're now logged into the Linux workstation. It has an Ethernet card in it. You can reconfigure the Ethernet card. You can, in fact, you can safely reconfigure the Ethernet card because you're actually... You are actually connected into the... you're actually connected in via the serial console, so it's safe to reconfigure the network. So we'll log out of there, because if you don't log out of there, let me show you what happens if you don't log out of there.
Control B disconnected. G port status colon enter CMS greater.
Let's go back in there.
/C5 enter connected 05:WKS1. Set enter copy at WKS1:$.
You are still sitting exactly where you were previously. So it's very important to try and clean up and tidy up the things you're going to do.
Control D logout.
So that you get it back to a consistent state for the previous students. So we break back out of that.
Control B disconnected. G port status colon version 3.0. Site ID colon copy bundle.
Okay, any questions so far? I don't know about you guys. Control B. It says so when you connect. Listen.
Enter CMS greater. /C4 enter connected 04:switch1. To disconnect enter :B.
To disconnect enter *B. It tells you. Pay attention when you connect, and you will not get yourself into trouble.
Control B, disconnect.
Yes.
Status colon version.
Yes, Steve.
Two questions. First, how do we get out of the bundle entirely? And second, after we take this course, is there a way to get access to something like this? Is this something we just have for the duration of the course? This seems super useful. Like, beyond the course we're taking.
Oh, it's useful. And in fact, we are the only academy in the world that is allowed to have a remote Cisco configuration bundle. Basically, you stay friends with us and you don't annoy us, and we give you time on our bundle if you need to use it. You could probably build yourself something like this, but there will be a booking system put in place where you can book time on the remote bundle. At the moment, that is not in place. What you need to do, and this is probably worth mentioning, actually, I'm glad you reminded me, is that when you are connected to the remote bundle and you are working, pardon me, on the remote bundle, you need to be sitting in... Has everybody seen those Pod 1, Pod 2, Pod 3 channels in Ventrilo?
Yeah.
Yes, that is where you need to be so that people can see that you are working on the remote bundle. And then if one of your fellow students comes in and comes and talks to you and says, "Oi, what are you doing on the remote bundle?" And you go, "I'm working on lab 6.7.1. And they go, "Well, it just so happens I'm working on lab 6.7.1 as well. How about we both work together on the remote bundle?" And then you have fun times, or at least that's the theory. How do you get out of the remote bundle altogether? Well, there's a help screen, which you could read. By going /H. I'll just show you what that looks like.
/H, enter, key, command menu, colon, display, /S port status, /SD port diagnostics, /W port parameters, left paren, right paren, /J site ID, /H command menu, left paren, alt right paren, control, /Enter greater enter command mode, /X exit command mode, /CN connect to port, left paren, end colon, port number or name, right paren, CMS greater.
And that didn't actually read all of it because Jaws was being a bit silly, but if you go /X, it'll bail you out of the entire remote bundle.
This is incredible.
It's very powerful. We like it a lot. It's very cool.
Mark Caesar has just signed into Facebook chat.
Windows Live Messenger, you're going.
Backspace character, delete character.
Select the window you wish to unbind and then click quote unquote 3U 1.5 colon 3 left 0. Stack 1 open, 5 items, 1.1 colon Skype trademark left bracket 1.2 colon Windows Live Messenger 192.168.100.1. Windows Live Messenger, Alt F4, Windows Live Messenger, 192.
The backspace character is...
Alt S, menus, low key map dot dot, terminal dot, window dot, font dot, keyboard dot dot dot, hey, enter, leaving menus, paraterm, colon, keyboard setup dialog, transmit delphi, colon, backspace, key, checkbox, not checked, Alt plus B, file edit, setup, control, window.
It is Control H, which is what it should be. Control H is a destructive backspace, just to violate, like, all of the people and make them really unhappy. But on this system... Control H is a destructive backspace. Technically, it shouldn't be, and in term cap, it's not, and you shouldn't set it up that way. But that's what it is.
That would explain my password entry problem. Incidentally, I just sort of once I've logged in, it's all right. I can change the configuration.
Tab, transmit delphi colon delete key checkbox check Alt plus D.
Hang on. Look, it depends on who you talk to about whether the backspaces should be destructive or not. You know, if it doesn't work, try Control H instead. That's usually been my that's usually been my experience with these things. I would actually have to check what the Cisco default is. Does Cisco, what one does Cisco see? I think this thing will take, well, this one thing should have taken either of them, but maybe it doesn't.
Shift tab, transmit delta, shift tab, help button, shift tab, cancel, shift tab, okay, space.
Perhaps happening telnet over serial, so it's probably going to be a bit more interesting than just doing plain telnet or plain serial, so I'll have to look into it.
Okay. Now, I actually just need to do an experiment. This is has anybody got any questions? Is there anything else that anybody wants me to show on the remote bundle?
10:02 a.m.
Before I turn the virtual audio cable pass-throughs off. And does anybody else want my virtual audio scripts that make it setting it up infinitely easier?
Ventrilo dialog, username, server binding, setup button.
Okie dokie, now we are switched back to the regular microphone. Does anybody have any questions? I'm just going to close virtual audio cables down here. Actually, I've got to switch Jaws back. Okie dokie, there's Jaws switched back, and... Alrighty, does anybody have any questions, queries, things that they want to ask about, things that they want to talk about? Did anybody find that interesting? The remote, well, apart from Steve, who definitely found that interesting. Everybody else find the remote bundle somewhat interesting?
Yeah, I'll find it more interesting when I actually come to play with it, I think. But it's a good demonstration to show how to get around.
Absolutely. Keep in mind, in the networking subfolder of general instructions, I think it's under there. Otherwise, it's in the exploration section. Has everybody seen the Ciscopedia that's lying around?
Yes, it's in the general instructions, I think.
That is a CHM file. Once you install it, it unpacks a CHM file, and then if you've got something like 7-zip, you can tear all of the HTML out of the CHM. Yes, you're on a Mac, aren't you? And then you can view it. Otherwise, you can use Windows to view it, and it comes up quite nicely as a help file. So I would strongly recommend people getting their hands on Ciscopedia. It has a complete command reference for all of the Cisco iOS commands. Alrighty. Now, any other pending things we need to go on with at the moment? Do I need to do more binary and stuff today? Because I can. We've still got time. Or you can hit me up on Skype individually if you would not, if you want to find out how this binary stuff works. There are actually some extra exercises in the section, extras section of the lab folder. I would like binary exercise 1 completed by next week, please. Alrighty, I'm going to press stop on record and we'll see if anybody's got anything else pending that they don't want on the recording and we'll take it from there.